the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Thanksgiving week edition of the College Football Fix is here. I'm Dan Wolkin. He's Paul Meyerberg. Just watched the College Football Playoff Selection Committee put out the latest rankings. It's interesting, 10 years of this thing, and you sort of understand the cadence. You know what to expect. Washington is flipped with Florida State. Washington's number four. Florida State's number five. Obviously, the big news that's going to affect the playoff as we move forward is Jordan Travis. And it's just extremely unfortunate. You're just sick to your stomach that he is out for the season for Florida State. You know, my read on this whole thing right now, Paul, is that I don't think the committee is doing anything right now to box themselves in, to rock the boat. They're just going to sort of sit back and let it play out. Washington should have been in the top four before this, clearly. But I want to get into the Travis injury and whether it's Florida State. But it just seems like the committee right now is just hoping that this all works itself out and they're not going to have to make any tough decisions.
Yeah, they've gotten cagier, the committee, like across a couple different chair people about like setting things up. They've gotten better at that. I think in the beginning, they learned a lot from 2014 because that was a disaster across the board.
Yeah.
So we should talk a lot about Florida State. I just like based off Tuesday night off tonight, like Washington should have been ahead of Florida State already. And I think there was some hesitancy on the part of the committee because of Arizona State, because of Stanford, because of USC. And I think the committee didn't want to buy in. But you can no longer make the argument that Florida State should be ahead. It's just ridiculous. But like, let's just keep in mind, like Washington beats or wins the Apple Cup. Florida State beats Florida. Next week, they're 3-4. I mean, they're 3-4. Next week. So, like, they're in the top four next week at 12-0. So, I just don't want to get too lost in the minutia about it. I think the big thing is down the line, those two words, which are best teams, and the committee can make best teams mean anything they want it to make. So, we should talk about what it would be like for Florida State at 13-0 if the committee would have somehow an argument for best teams and leaving Florida State out. I know it's hard to imagine, but I think we should consider the possibility.
Well, I'm just going to say it right now. There is no chance that Florida State, without Jordan Travis, is one of the best four teams in the country. They're just not. Now, I say that knowing we have not watched them play a real opponent with Tate Rodemaker. And he's got a little bit of experience. He played against Louisville in a game last year. I get all that. I know that they scored 50-something points against North Alabama last weekend. I don't really care about that, and I don't think anybody should. Let's just use logic here, okay? Before the injury to Jordan Travis, you and I were having conversations about a little worried about Florida State. You know, not necessarily that they were going to lose or that it was going to fall apart on them, but like, look at some of the quality of those wins. Like they didn't always look great. You know, they didn't look great against Clemson, right? They needed overtime. They didn't look great against Miami. It was very touch and go. I sort of put the Boston College win over there. It's like, I didn't love the way Florida State was trending before this. I know they have a lot of talent. They have good players, decent defense, tons of playmakers on offense. I mean, I don't mean to be cruel or mean or rude, but just given the way this is shaping up and the options that are available, in my mind, and I know my opinion doesn't matter, but Florida State cannot be one of the four best teams in the country if the standard is actually best teams. I don't think it's possible.
Well, if the standard is more importantly the committee being tasked with creating the best matchups, pitting the best teams. Then you're like looking at two different levels of it. It's not just whether you believe Florida State's one of the top four teams in the country. It's how you think they would fare against one of the top three teams in the country. with Jordan Travis, like, I'm not going to argue against Florida State earning it at 13-0 with Jordan Travis. But even with Jordan Travis, like, you would wonder, like, how would they match up? I don't know. Like, even with Travis, I don't know how Florida State would match up with Oregon or with Georgia or Michigan, Ohio State. Probably not that great, with all due respect to them. But the out is there for the committee, right? That's the out. Four best teams, best possible matchups. Maybe they look at that and they say Florida State doesn't meet the criteria that we're looking for. It'd be a lot easier if Florida State would just lose. But even if they go 13-0, Dan, I think it's all it is an Alabama win against Georgia away from them getting the boot. I think it's going to be that easy for the committee. If that's how it unfolds, I think you can easily see them on the cutting room floor at number five.
Ooh, I mean, you know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot the past several days about the playoff, the beginnings of it, when they first formed it. I remember going out to some meetings in California when they came up, you know, with the name College Football Playoff and the committee and the access bowls and sort of the bones of it, right? And I remember at that time, the conversation was, man, who's going to want to be on this committee? Like, it's going to be death threats. It's going to be people outside your house with pitchforks. You know, you're going to get on this committee and you're going to leave out a team. And it's going to be, your life is going to be ruined. Who's going to want that? Because they set this stupid thing up knowing five power conferences, four slots, one power conference champion was going to get left out. And actually what's happened is this thing has become so easy. It's like automatic pilot almost, right? They've not had to make a single tough decision in the whole history of this stupid playoff. The only one that's even come close was the first year when they put in Ohio State and knocked out TCU. And obviously Florida State fans are looking at that as the precedent because Braxton Miller got hurt and Cardale Jones had to come in and play. Now, the part of that that is missing from the comparison is Ohio State had to go play a Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin. Wisconsin was a 4-point favorite in that game, if you remember.
I was there. And then they destroyed him.
And Ohio State won 59-0, and that's what got them in. Now, look, if Florida State goes out and beats Florida by a couple touchdowns and then goes and plays Louisville and it's, you know, 38-7, I'll tip my cap to them and I'll say, you know what, put them in, whatever. Like, but the whole purpose of having this committee was actually to evaluate teams and to actually make tough decisions. Yes, it would be an extremely tough decision and a very unpopular one if Florida State at 13-0 is not in this playoff. And actually, I think if that's the way it plays out, that's why I think they will just put them in and they'll take somebody else out because they don't want the optic of being the committee that left out an unbeaten team. That's the way I would wager that it goes.
Totally.
But in terms of what they should do, if their job is to say we're picking the four best teams because we want to identify the best matchups to produce a rightful national champion, then I think there will be better options. You know, here a couple things, Paul, like no one's talking about, okay? Everyone's just saying, oh, well, you know, whoever wins the Pac-12 title game, if it's Oregon, Washington is getting in. Or well, what if Oregon wins it by a field goal? Why are we just casting Washington to the side? They already beat Oregon. And they got to play them again? Something nobody else has to do in the whole country. They got to play somebody a second time, beat somebody a second time after they've already done all this winning. They won at Utah. They won at Arizona. They've got three top 25 wins. They won at Oregon State. Like, why are we making Washington beat Oregon again just to get in instead of saying, you know, certainly possible they're still one of the four best if they go get beat by Oregon, who, by the way, we all think is a top five team. I mean, this to me is shaping up to be a bit infuriating if it breaks the wrong way.
Yeah, and I think the lucky thing for the committee is that I don't think it's going to Dan. I think you're going to have an SEC champ. I think it's going to be Georgia. You're going to have a Big Ten champ. You're going to have a Pac-12 champ, no matter who it is. I mean, I guess it could be Arizona, but it's probably going to be Oregon or Washington. And then you're going to have Florida State or Texas. I mean, that's what it is. You know what I mean? And I think that's how it's going to play out. I guess the bigger question is, like, how ticked off are Texas going to be? How ticked off is Texas going to be? How ticked off could the Big Ten runner-up be? How ticked off could Georgia be at 12-1 if they lose to Alabama? I mean, I think there are arguments for teams to make it if they get left out. But I feel like it's going to work out as planned for the committee. The important thing, I think, for Florida State, just to go back to them, and you mentioned it briefly, they need style points.
Yeah.
Like, they need style points big time these next 2 weeks, and they need to show the committee that we're still really good. They just can't – they're not – you can't – even at 13-0 or even at 11-0, they can't backdoor into this thing. They got to kick it in. That's what Ohio State did. They kicked it in. So that's Florida State's situation, and I don't – I feel bad for them. I feel terrible for them. Injuries are part of the game.
And, it's gutting. It's gutting.
And it's North Alabama. I mean, it's just devastating. Just devastating.
Now, you know, but as we sort of try to play out all the scenarios, imagine being Texas here. Imagine being Texas. All right, you won at Alabama. You didn't just win at Alabama. You won by a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you won going away in Tuscaloosa. And then you did nothing wrong except for give up a final minute drive to a top 15, top 12 Oklahoma team on a neutral field, and you're out of the playoff? Like, there's no team in the history of the playoff that would have been left out that would be more deserving than Texas.
Yeah, and it can't happen, right? Like, I'm just thinking about the scenario they can get left out. Like, if Alabama beats Georgia and the Big Ten champ is unbeaten, and Washington beats Oregon, Texas gets in, right? Ahead of Georgia?
I guess.
That's the thing. Like, but then you're like, holy cow, two-time back-to-back defending champs, not in the playoff? So, look, like, it's weird, right? Like, as our listeners probably have recognized, like, we've been only talking about the same eight teams for the entire duration of the playoff. The same eight. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Washington, Florida State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama. The same teams every single week. And yet it still could be the most complicated finish line yet. Unless stuff happens rivalry weekend. So we'll talk about that at the end. But that would be really helpful. You have a couple underdogs to get up and take down a rival.
It's fascinating. The last year of this four-teamer to be the most difficult one to figure out is par for the course for college football. Of course, you know, they could have had the 12-teamer this year, probably, if they had hurried and Kevin Warren hadn't obstructed and all that stuff in 2021. But it is what it is. And, yeah, I think this justifies why going to 12 will be good for the sport. Although, certainly, like, the stakes cannot be higher. You know, there were some games last year down the stretch that did not necessarily feel like the biggest stakes, right? I think all the stakes are huge. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to be locked into Florida State this weekend. We're going to be locked in to, you know, to Oregon State. Like, these are extremely, extremely important games. It, in some ways, like, what we're experiencing now is what the playoff should have been or what it was supposed to be with the four teams. And it just turned out that because it's hard to go undefeated, it's hard to get through a season without injuries, it's hard to win conference championships. Like, it's sort of fallen in a certain way that it made us think it was always going to be easy. And it's just not. I feel terrible sort of running down Florida State in a way, but it's just like, I'm trying to be realistic here. Like, Florida State's not going to win a national championship with Tate Rodemaker at quarterback. Right. I mean, that's the one thing I think we can say with certainty.
No, I agree. And this is not like you and me, this is us having done this for 10 years with the playoff, like, just being aware of what the mindset is and what the group thing is in that room. The basic underlying point is whether or not you think Florida State can win two games there, like, as just a fan, the committee has a way to leave them out. That's the basic point. And you cannot say that really about any other team. You can't leave Washington out, right? You can't leave Georgia out. You're not leaving the Big Ten champ out. The only one that you could potentially leave out is Florida State. And we've never been in this situation before. Never. You know, with a team that would be in, all things being equal. It's not Ohio State 2014. Another difference, Dan, between 2014 Ohio State and this year's Florida State is that they lost Braxton Miller like in September. They showed as a team how good they were by rallying around their second string guy. So by the time you got to the third string guy, you're like, well, we already know how good this team is because look how good they are with the number two. So I think there's a little bit of a different thing.
Yeah.
Not to say that Florida State can't match that. I just think the runway is really short, and I think there's not a lot of time and not a good enough opponents left for them to really make a statement. You can poo-poo both of these wins, whether they're by 40 or 50 or whatever points. You could find a way to dismiss both of them against Florida and Louisville.
I still think Washington's not getting enough respect. I mean, look, I don't know that they have the kind of complete team that could go and win it all. Although I do think if there's any team that they remind me of, I think it might be, you know, like Clemson 2015, Clemson 2016. Like it didn't always look exactly right, but they were very good at winning games. You know, unbelievable quarterback play, tough in the end. You know, they would play just enough defense when they needed to win some of these games. That's kind of who they remind me of, and I do think it's impressive that they keep, you know, sort of ending up, you know, it doesn't feel like luck per se that they're winning all these close games, you know, but at the same time, yeah, there is some variance there, and at some point probably, probably luck will reverse itself, but maybe it's not till next year. Look at TCU. The TCU regression to the mean didn't happen the entire season, really. And they got all the way to the national championship game. I mean, Washington's got great wins. You know, maybe they just play up or down to the level of their competition. I think they should be number two, really.
Well, the resume says number two. I mean, the quality of wins. I mean, Ohio State's got two good wins, Notre Dame and Penn State.
Those yeah, no, the, and the Notre Dame win is...
They're fine. They're top 20 wins.
Notre Dame is ranked behind Oregon State, by the way.
Yeah, they're 20. They're 18 or something like that. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, Washington's got the best win in the country. They've got Arizona. They've got Utah. They've got USC. They've got all these Pac-12 wins, some of them close, yeah. But still, I mean, they've got a better resume than Ohio State overall. So, yeah, they could be number two. That's just the basic point. Washington 13-0 with two wins against Oregon. Yeah, I mean, the idea that they would not make it is ludicrous. They are 100% locked into the number three seed at 13-0. There's just not even an ounce of doubt about that.
Yeah, and, you know, I was talking to some folks this past weekend just sort of about the overall level of disrespect at Washington, and I think sort of the feeling there is, you know, hey – this sort of shows you the importance of going to the Big Ten because people really gassed up the Pac-12 early in the season, and that's kind of gone away. You know, it's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. And I think it's extremely important, or extremely, I think it justifies what Washington and Oregon did, because in this new world that we're getting ready for, apparently you got to play some games. You got to play some games in the Central and Eastern time zone to get the proper credit.
Yeah. You got to play Rutgers. I mean, you can't just play Utah. You got to play Rutgers and you got to play Indiana. You got to beat Nebraska by 40. So yeah, I mean, not to mention Dan Lanning is probably going to stay at Oregon in part because they're in the Big Ten. I mean, that has to play a role in his decision if he decides to stick around and not go somewhere else. So no doubt in my mind, like Pac-12 was hot stuff a couple months ago. It's not a worse league. It's still a really good league. But there has been a forgetfulness, I think. Not to mention the committee has never liked Washington that much. You know, so I just think they're battling a lot, but it's not really a concern. My biggest concern for them is playing Oregon on a neutral site. I'm not worried about the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. Speaking of Oregon, by the way, it seems like the tide on the Heisman stuff has turned a little bit toward Bo Nix. I don't care that much about the Heisman generally. I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time talking about it. Are you still voting for the Heisman? You're not voting.
But I would vote for Nix.
You'd vote
for Nix. If a season ended today, I would definitely vote for Nix. Not definitely, but I vote for him over Daniels. I'd have Daniels 2, and maybe I'd do a wild card number 3. Penix hasn't played well enough of late to win it. Bo Nix is incredible. He's completing like 78% of his passes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't spell 78% of words without screwing something up. He's completing 78% of his passes. That's wild. So, I think it's going to end up being Daniels because, again, Pac-12, but Bo Nix has been awesome.
I'll tell you, though, I mean, that Friday night Pac-12 championship game, it's the only game. Everybody watches it. It's obviously going to have huge importance for the playoff and everything else. I do think with LSU not playing on championship weekend, Bo Nix showing out, leading Oregon to the playoff, I think that would win it, personally. Because I think most voters now hold until the very end. And I think it's that last impression. It's that last impression. You know, we've seen it before. We saw it with Kyler Murray, right? It was just literally stole it from Tua that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's a cliche now to say people are like voting the week before. It's so easy. I think most people are waiting for Saturday night, Sunday. So yeah, that final weekend can seal the deal for sure. And likewise for Michael Penix. Like if he goes for 404 touchdowns, that might be enough to offset some sour play and get back on top. So that should be a good one. And now watch Arizona get into the Pac-12 championship game.
Not much to report right now on the coaching carousel front. Obviously, you know, Mississippi State's looking for a coach, A&M. You know, I saw Ross Bjork, the athletic director at A&M, was at some function a couple days ago and said, you know, this is not an 8-4 job. Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, I did the math. I did the math.
Okay.
Since 2000, this century, it's like 24 years, they have averaged 7.3 wins. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that that's what they have to be forever and ever and ever. Obviously, they've gone to the SEC since then. They've put in all this money and yada, yada, yada. I just wish A&M would just go sort of quietly hire a coach. Just do it, you know, just do it quietly. Don't put any, you know, fake trophies in front of them at the press conference. Don't give them any golden boots or anything like that. Don't boast about we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Don't tell us what you're going to do or what you can do because we've all seen what you have done. And just let the man coach, and then let's just see. Let's get back here in 4 or 5 years, and let's just see how it goes. I don't know who that guy's going to be. You know, they obviously interviewed Jeff Traylor last weekend before UTSA played a game, and then Traylor was asked about it once it became public, and I thought gave one of the most ridiculous answers to that question I've ever seen. Said it would be a travesty to have to answer that question when he's got, you know, seniors on senior day doing senioring. Jeff, this is the big leagues, buddy. This is the big leagues. Like, stuff's going to get out. You're going to get asked about it. And if you want to coach at A&M, you probably should handle it a little better than that. I don't know that he's the guy. There's a little more Jed Fish buzz of late. you gave him a look.
No, I didn't. Look, we've said very good things about Jed Fish right now, the last couple months, and he's earned every inch of it. I cannot believe. That's just...
Well, I mean, if it's not Jeff Traylor, who's it going to be?
Be Jeff Traylor. I mean, I just think it should just be Jeff. I know what you're saying. I don't know who's out there. I mean, I know who's out there. I don't know who is going to take that job. I know that a lot of people would take the money. Look, you could do a lot worse than Jed Fish. You could hire Jimbo Fisher. I didn't mean to be rude. I just feel like we've been hearing Jed Fish to X, Jed Fish to Y for a long time.
Well, but they're actually good. But he's actually done a good job.
He's the Pac-12 Coach of the Year. And you know what? If they get to the Pac-12 title game, I don't know if I'd vote him National Coach of the Year, but I would have him on my ballot. I think he's done tremendous work. But
it's
a different world down there.
Oh,
Jed Fish is not built for that world.
Say no more. Arkansas keeping Sam Pittman. What do you think of that?
I'm speechless. Like, I'm actually thinking out what to say. Like, I was trying to think what to say. There is every reason why they should have fired him. But I applaud the fact that they didn't in a strange way. I like the fact that I understand that there's a connection between him and the AD. The AD hires him. Your job might as well also be on the line. So I understand that there's a connection there. But I would give Pittman a second chance. I think the returns on that hire have been solid enough outside of this year that it just feels premature. So I'm all about it. I'm all about giving him another year. I'm having a hard time defending it, as you can tell.
The reason I think it's a mistake is I just think it's a good job market for a school like Arkansas to be out trying to hire a coach this year. Mm-hmm. There's really not a lot of competition. There's Mississippi State. You know, Syracuse is now open. Like, they're sort of the best job in that group of schools that could potentially be open. And I think that's a better time to go hire a coach than next year, for instance, if Pittman doesn't get it together next year. Well, then they could be in competition with a bunch of others, because that's just the way this stuff goes. It's a cycle, and this is the down part of the cycle. And I'm just afraid for Arkansas. They bring Pittman back, it's the same crap. And then next year they're in the same situation that they were in when they hired Pittman, which is they were competing against Florida. They were competing against Ole Miss. They were competing against a whole bunch of Mizzou. You know, and so like, oh, and Florida State, all those schools were open when they hired Pittman, and they all were circling the same candidates, right? It was Lane Kiffin, it was Eli Drinkwitz, it was Mike Norvell, and just in the shuffle of all that, Arkansas ends up with the 60-year-old offensive line coach from Georgia. Like, I'm just afraid if they don't make the move now, that's where they're going to find themselves next year. And so that's why I would do it now, but apparently they don't have the money, or they don't want to spend the money.
They don't want to spend it, right? Yeah. Well, look, if the answer is, if like the next step after firing Pittman is just to hire Malzahn or to make a run at Malzahn, maybe you feel like, hey, what's the point? We can give him another year. Malzahn's going to be there in a year. I'm just trying to imagine what their thought process might be. Because to me, if you're Arkansas, that's your first call, right? I mean, it's the Gus Malzahn. Bring him back home. Why not? He knows the SEC. He can recruit the area. He's coached in the state on multiple levels. So that's what I would think their step would be. And maybe if they feel that way, they just think, whatever, let's give Pittman another year. Just a theory.
You mentioned Malzahn. I saw a radio host from Mississippi who I follow on social media, I've been on a show before, was on there saying that Mississippi State needs to go pay Gus Malzahn $8 million a year, and that's what they need to do. Woo!
$8 million?
Yeah.
Dollars?
Yeah, for Gus Malzahn.
American? Okay.
Yeah. Not.
Does he
not
need more money? I mean, can he just like, can he give them a deal? Like 800,000? 1 million? I mean, he's got so much cash. But
it's so incestuous in that league. I mean, you saw Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze. Look what that got you. A loss to New Mexico State.
Not just a loss. Not just a loss. It was an ass-kicking. Auburn paid New Mexico State $1.8 million to have their pants pulled down and their ass beat for 60 minutes.
It was bad.
That's what it was. I was watching this game in the second half. Eric Smith was, and I will chat on teams throughout the game. And like maybe, I don't know what it was, Eric. It was like 15 minutes after the game ended, he was like, oh my God, I just saw the Auburn score. That's like the reaction of all of America. Watching them lose by, I think they lost by 21 or 17 or 14 at home to New Mexico State. Just amazing. Regardless of whether New Mexico State's good or not, that's incredible.
I'm going to continue to believe that Freeze will get it together there, that it's a talent issue more than anything, but
yeah.
That's not good. I'm not really watching too many other jobs. Like, I don't think Baylor's opening. There's been some talk about that. I feel pretty confident that, at least for now, they're not inclined to fire Dave Aranda. You know, North Carolina is going to be interesting. Does Mac come back? Does he just pack it in? You know, he's 70-something-year-old man, right? And I think they've been disappointing.
He's coming back, and he's out recruiting, and he's ready for next season. So we will see.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think Mac Part 2 has been. It's been underwhelming for me. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, now, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about coordinators. The USC defensive coordinator search is going to be crucial. They're going to spend a lot of money on that position from what I hear. So interesting times. All right, let's move on to talk about Michigan, Ohio State. I think it deserves its own sort of segment on this podcast. It's that important. It's that big. Since our last show, Michigan fires Chris Partridge, linebackers coach, which was, I think, sort of the holy S moment for a lot of people who have been insisting all along that, you know, this was no big deal. It was, you know, Connor Stallions, the lone wolf, that, you know, Michigan didn't deserve to be punished. What rule did they break? Blah, blah, blah. We heard all of it for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And then Thursday, out of nowhere, we get a release. Michigan has accepted the three-game suspension. Jim Harbaugh is not going to coach this weekend against Ohio State. And the next day, Chris Partridge out. This thing's not over by a long shot. It is a mushrooming scandal. Now, if there's good news for Michigan in all this, I think that they're probably in the clear until the playoff. Right. At this point, like, I think that part of that phase of it is over. There's not going to be any more disruption on that end of it until the playoff is over. But the way they played last week against Maryland, it's not unreasonable to wonder if all of this is weighing on them to some degree.
Yeah, I'm curious about, like, the Harbaugh impact on Saturdays, whether that was a manifestation of not having him. Because it was 23-3. And to me at that point, I thought, okay, like, this Penn State game was just a byproduct of a game plan. Like, because that was still game control. That was a game control win. They went by 9, but it might as well have been 90. Like, it was closer than, obviously, it actually was. So I thought they had kind of righted the ship. They had that get back to 31-24. And don't forget, like, it was 29-24. I think Maryland had the ball three times in the fourth or third and fourth with a chance to take the lead in that game. So to win by a touchdown, I'm just curious if maybe there's an aspect of that that can be attributed to not having Harbaugh there, not having his influence. So if so, then watch out on Saturday, obviously. I need to watch out anyway. But if you need Harbaugh to steer this ship through 60 minutes, that concerns me. So I don't want to make too much out of Maryland, but it's the first time all season where I watched Michigan and thought, okay, these guys are beatable. I had not thought that in either one of their first 10 games.
Not only are they beatable, they're going to get beat this weekend by Ohio State. Ohio State's going in and winning the game. I am banking on trend lines here. And I see Ohio State's trend line going like this, and my arm is going up to the sky. And I see Michigan's trend line going like this, and it's going down to my computer. I think these are two ships passing in the night. Obviously, it's in Ann Arbor. That's a totally different ball game, but it's not like Ohio State hadn't won in Ann Arbor before. Won there a bunch of times. Yeah. I think this game for Michigan is important, not just for the obvious reasons, Big Ten championship, college football playoff, but if they lose, the narrative is going to be easy. The narrative is going to be, well, they only beat Ohio State the last couple years because they cheated, because Connor Stallions had the signals, because they violated rules. Now, I don't want to get into the moral arguments, and I certainly would not say that Ohio State's never violated a rule. I'm sure they violated a lot over the years. And Michigan fans were the first to make that claim every time they lost to Ohio State for years and years and years. But putting that to the side, that will be the narrative if Michigan loses, that no Connor Stallions, no schematic advantage, no beating Ohio State. And it will be the greatest thing that has ever happened to Ryan Day.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, another narrative I think to come out of this game if they lose, like, let's just take a step back for a second. They've played 12 games, right? Jim Harbaugh is suspended for six of them.
It's unbelievable.
He's been suspended for half of their season for his crap. Like, I don't care that, like, whatever you believe, that he did not know about a sign stealing scandal. I really don't care, like, about that aspect, because he is the head of the program, and anything that happens is on his watch, right? So he's going to be suspended for 6 games. You've got suspensions, you've got rule violations, you've got, as you said, a mushrooming scandal that is going to get worse as more comes out, whether or not it's before the playoff or after. What do you have to show for it? Like, you've got all this offseason agita with Harbaugh every single year. Will he come back or won't he? What do we need to pay him? Do we need to pay him less money? Do we need to redo his contract, give him more years, less years? You've got this deal, and all you have to show for it comes Saturday at whatever, 11:30 at night, if this is the case, is a loss to Ohio State and a team that won't even play for a Big Ten championship. So what was it all for? You know what I mean? And for me, we're at this point. They're 11-1. They will have lost the Big Ten East. Harbaugh wasn't even there. Why is he here in the first place? What is he doing for you except embarrassing you, creating an embarrassing program off the field and one that can't beat Ohio State? So what is he doing here? That's probably too strong. I don't know if everyone's going to go there immediately, but that's what I would be thinking. What is he good for? What is he doing for you?
Well, look, he has clearly restored a baseline level of competence to the program.
But at what cost? He's not even on the field. He's not even there. You know what I mean? Like, he's missed half the season, half of their games. He wasn't even there. He was drinking milk on the couch.
And if he comes back, there's a good chance he'll miss more games next year because of the other investigation, right? Or whatever else gets found by the NCAA as they expand the Connor Stallions investigation. So yeah, he's not out of the woods for sure on all this. High stakes. I mean, look, Ryan Day, even if some fans have had it in their mind now that the only reason they lost to Michigan was sign stealing, 3 in a row to Michigan would be very bad for him.
Very, very bad. He needs it. He needs it bad. So after all of this nonsense that I just spoke about, I'm going to take Michigan just to be different. Just to be different. And my reasoning will be that I believe, after watching these two teams for 11 games, that A, Michigan's the better team. Michigan is less reliant on individual super studs than Ohio State. I think they can throw more at Ohio State on both sides of the ball than Ohio State can throw at them. And it's at home. I think those are pretty good reasons. But like you said, like, if you just watched last week, no one in their right mind would pick Michigan to win this game. If you just watched last week or the last 2 weeks. So have you said that it's going to be high stakes? Because these are high stakes. I'm already feeling myself getting a little bit on edge.
Yeah, and it's going to be cold and it's going to be gray. And
nothing like Indianapolis after dark on a Saturday in December. Just a lovely place to be.
Indianapolis?
Isn't the game...
Ann Arbor.
I don't know why I was just thinking about the Big Ten championship game. Why did my brain go to the following Saturday?
You just glitched.
My God. I was just writing about it, but that's still no excuse. I was still thinking about how crappy Indianapolis is. That's how I'm like a week ahead. But yeah, it's going to be – is it going to be cold? This shows how much I know. I don't even know where
– Yeah, it's going to be cold. It's going to be in the 30s.
Any precipitation?
I don't see any on the radar, but, that could change.
Wind? Do we have any wind?
Well, I didn't get that granular. Okay. In the
gotta get my barometer out. Just try to get some wind readings.
Yeah, wind would
be air good. Pressure. Air pressure. That's what barometer is. Yeah. Okay. Well, look. If it's the colder and nastier it gets, the better for Michigan.
So I think that's probably true. Yeah. Okay. What? Like, do you think this is a game in the 20s? Is it in the teens?
I think 20. So when we did our picks, I said 27-21 Michigan. I do think it gets into the 20s. Like, these are two good defenses, but there's a lot of talent on the field. So 27-21, that feels right to me. That feels right to me.
I'm going to go Ohio State 21-16.
Nice. Okay.
Okay. Let's just kind of go through games we think are worth talking about. I don't think the Egg Bowl is worth talking about, even though I always fall asleep during the Egg Bowl. I got to admit, I always fall asleep during the Egg Bowl. I can't stay up that late after all the turkey and the wine and the bourbon and whatever else. I cannot do it.
For sure. That's like, it's a very cozy game. Like, you sit down and watch that game full. And maybe you have a little treat or something, like, in the middle quarters. But, yeah, that's a tough one to get through four. Like, you will definitely, like, I remember, I think I fell asleep or, like, was kind of dozy during the, when the guy peed in the end zone.
Yeah, Elijah Moore.
A couple years back, Elijah Moore. So you don't blink during the Egg Bowl and don't fall asleep. You'll miss something.
Iowa at Nebraska, I bring it up because we kind of thought it was a lock that Nebraska was going to get bowl eligible. And it's just they've absolutely cratered.
Yeah.
But
three in a row, right? Since we talked about that, is that how many they've lost? Wow.
Yeah. And they're 5-6 and they have to win this game. But they're actually favored by like 2.5 points over.
2.5 points.
Yeah, but
what's the over under on this? 30, 31, 28, 29, something like that?
I'm struggling to find it here on the app I've got. 26.5.
26.5. Okay. 26.5. Very nice. Yeah, this is going to be another Iowa win.
I mean, I don't believe in curses or cursed programs, but if Nebraska loses 4 in a row to not get bowl eligible this year
it's tough. But look, they're not good, so it's not that tough. I'm not going to cry too much for them. But they'll get a lot better. They're not that good right now.
Miami at Boston College, 2-6-5 teams. Who would have thought that at the beginning of the season? Jesus. All right, UTSA at Tulane. Interesting game. Like we said, the Jeff Traylor stuff in the background. But, you know, Tulane is 10-1. They've had a lot of sort of close and not really pretty wins. Their only loss this year was to Ole Miss.
Right.
UTSA is also undefeated in the American Athletic Conference. So a lot on the line there. I got to be honest, I have not watched a lot of either team this season. Just hadn't worked out. But that's one to keep an eye on. I mean, that's 3:30 ABC. What a showcase for UTSA.
Yeah, for sure. Look, Tulane has had too many close calls for me to feel really good about them. And the fact that they're 10-1, they went 13-1 last year. They went 12-2 last year. Beat the heck out of USC, the Cotton Bowl, and they're still like number 23 in the playoff rankings, two spots ahead of Liberty. That tells you all you need to know. I just don't think that they played as well as they could. Amazing thing about Traylor and UTSA, they haven't lost a conference game in 3 years across two different leagues.
That's impressive.
Two different leagues.
That's impressive.
That's incredible. That's amazing. So I give him a lot of credit. Tulane is the safer pick. I think UTSA is going to win it. I think they're going to win it, and then they'll play SMU a week later. Because I think UTSA, we broke them off after loss number three, but they've been really, really good, better than Tulane in league play.
You might be right about that. You might be right. amazingly, Air Force at Boise State is a game with some Mountain West Conference title implications for Boise State, who fired their coach. I mean, this is what a weird year.
Hey, what do you think about them like actually making a run at Kellen Moore? Do you think they could actually do it?
Why wouldn't they just rehire Brian Harsin?
Oh, no. Well, because there are a lot of people around there who don't really like Brian Harsin.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
But no, but I agree with you. Like, I would, that's a good hire. And he wants to go back and he would take the job. But I was like, the job's open. Like, you didn't actually do much of a search last time. Would you give a shot? Give him a call? I don't know. I mean, if I were him, I wouldn't take the job. Like, never go home. But, Brian Harsin would be cool. That would be good for them.
Texas has got to win against Texas Tech at home. And they almost certainly will Friday night. there's 120-something possibilities for the Big 12 title game right now. It's ludicrous. Texas can knock a lot of those out by winning. It only really gets super complicated if Texas loses to Texas Tech. So for the sake of yourself and the league and just all of college football, don't lose to Texas Tech.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Like, if Texas wins, they're in. If Oklahoma State wins, they're in.
Right.
Like, just don't overthink it than that. But if Texas loses and Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Kansas State win, that's where you get like 108 out of the 126 potential tiebreakers, because you have four teams at 7-2. So I am rooting for that.
Yeah. All right. Oregon State at Oregon. Ducks are like a 2-touchdown favorite. I have a lot of respect for Oregon State. The game probably should be closer than that, but I'm telling you, man, Oregon's got that. They've got that step on your throat right now, you know?
Yeah. Like that's actually a really good point. Like I would not, because I find it to be disrespectful, I would not make them 13 point favorites. That just feels like too much, but I would pick them to win by 14 or 13 points for the reason you said. I think Oregon State's a little bit limited on offense. Like they are who they are and they don't try to be more than that, which is why they're 8-3. But regardless of what you feel about defensively, what you have on the table, and their defense is dang good, like you got to run with Oregon. Like you're going to have to get 28 plus points, and I just don't even know if they can get there, like just period against Oregon. So, this is Oregon's really good. If I feel like people are watching them, right? Like we don't have to continue to sell Oregon. If you're not watching Oregon,
yeah, you should be.
Time to watch them because like as you said for like 3 months, they are one team outside the SEC Big Ten that we both think could win two games in January.
The problem with them is that they actually don't have a top 25 win. That's the problem with them right now. Now this would be one if they beat Oregon State. But just on eye test, they're monsters.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Kentucky at Louisville. Important only because Florida State really needs Louisville to win. Florida State desperately needs Louisville to win this game and to go into the ACC championship at 11-1 and to be ranked in the top 10. I do not think Louisville has a path to the playoff. People have included them in sort of the outer reaches of playoff contention. I cannot see it. They lost to freaking Pitt.
No, there's legitimately no realistic scenario.
I couldn't even tell you what would have to happen. And I don't think it could.
Some multiple natural disasters across multiple states for Louisville to get into the playoff. And look, like we never talk about them. So let's just say for a second, I think for me, I don't really know what people are saying down in Louisville about Jeff Brown and about the season they've had. So this is just an assumption. But my assumption is that folks down there are just doing dang cartwheels.
Yeah.
Because this has got to be one of the most memorable years in program history. Unbelievable how good, how successful they've been.
Absolutely. And that's why Jeff Brom was always the obvious choice for Louisville. I mean, that, you know, they just couldn't, the timing didn't work last time. And they got very lucky that Scott Satterfield decided to go to Cincinnati.
Right.
So, yeah, tremendous season. And they should beat Kentucky. All right, Iron Bowl. It's in Auburn. We've seen Iron Bowls get funky in Auburn. I've been at a couple of them. I have a hard time believing that a team that just got beat like that by New Mexico State is going to turn around and compete with Alabama, but we've seen it before, I guess, in some form or fashion.
Yeah, it could get crazy, but that would be particularly crazy for them to beat Alabama, even at home. To go from New Mexico State to beating Alabama would be whiplash. We'd have to talk to – we'd have to get a lawyer for that.
Liberty at UTEP, only worth mentioning because Liberty can polish off a 12-0 regular season. In Conference USA, they snuck into the committee rankings at number 25. So they're in the mix to get the Access Bowl. However, if UTSA beats Tulane, I would imagine UTSA will – have something to say about that. Obviously SMU is in the mix as well. You know, Jamie Chadwell, good coach, has done a good job following Hugh Freeze. It's hard to go 12-0. So if they do it, and they should, hats off.
Yeah. Congrats. 12-0 is one heck of an achievement, but they're not going to finish first in the group of five.
I don't.
They've got three American teams ahead of them. And one of those three is going to win the conference. So it's just not feasible. Just not feasible.
Okay, Apple Cup. It's been a little bit of a disappointing season for Washington State, I would say. I thought they were going to be a little bit better than this. 5-6. you know, the Huskies, it's just kind of a, I think it's a focus thing. Like, they just need to focus this week. You know, don't, you know, they're not that I, they're, you know, still celebrating or whatever, but, you know, it's a tough game. They just, it was an emotional win. It was a tough game at Oregon State. You've got the Pac-12 championship coming up. You just don't want to, you don't want to let down here. That's it.
Yeah. And they're going to rekindle this series, I think, through 28. I think they agreed to a 5-year extension the other day. So in a sense, like, if it was the last meeting of the Apple Cup for the foreseeable future, I would be more concerned in a strange way, like, just because crazy things would almost certainly happen. Washington's been a really bad team in the second half, so I don't really know how you would think that they could beat Washington. I just don't see it. So Huskies should be fine.
Okay, what do you think is going to happen with Florida State? Florida, keep in mind, Graham Mertz is also out. He broke his collarbone, so both teams are on backup quarterbacks. I don't know. What do you think? It's in the swamp.
Yeah, I think it's still Florida State, and this is a sentence that we've never said before, but I feel a whole lot better if Graham Mertz was playing, like if he was playing for Florida, because it's like the one positive thing that you could say about Napier right now is that he did a good job with Graham Mertz. He really did. He did a really nice job developing him into a better quarterback. Still going to be Florida State. Florida 5-7 with a loss, and Napier is 11-14 after 2 years. That's
not good.
That's hard. That's hard.
He gets one more year. He gets one more year to show something. Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Yeah.
You know what? Those two teams are close geographically.
So, according per Kirby Smart, per sources.
This is a really close team to us on a geographic basis. This game is dull. I mean, they're just going to get the snot kicked out of them.
It used to be a big game, right? It was clean old fashioned hate.
Yeah.
Now it's just sort of, they're just two different weight classes.
When was the last win? Do you remember? Was it?
Well, wasn't it Kirby's first year?
And Paul Johnson was still there.
Yeah. I think it might have been Kirby's first year.
All right. Well, he said no more of that, and it was so.
Clemson at South Carolina. South Carolina's got a win to get to 6-6 and get bowl eligible. By the way, did you see that video last weekend of Shane Beamer with the Sandstorm guy? They brought in the DJ who wrote Sandstorm.
No.
You didn't see this?
No, I didn't see it.
I'll send it to you after the podcast. So they brought in – so I didn't realize this, but – apparently Sandstorm was written like 20 years ago by this Finnish DJ.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew he was going to the game.
Okay.
Right.
So he did a live performance of Sandstorm at the game. And then like there's a video of him on the field with Shane Beamer and Shane Beamer's doing a Shane Beamer thing. And he's like, man, thanks for all you've done for our program. And, and then he's like shaking his hand, and then he goes, if I'm ever in Finland, I'm going to look you up. And so it was amazing. I actually texted Shane Beamer on Sunday, and I actually told him, I said, if you get a chance to go to Finland, you should. I've been, it's beautiful. It's an amazing place to visit.
And, he should go. I wonder if he will. I bet you he won't.
I don't know. I'm trying to talk him into it. So Shane Beamer, that was just classic. If you haven't seen it, just like look it up. Just look up something about, Shane Beamer and Sandstorm, and you'll find the video. Clemson's going to win the game, by the way.
Clemson's going to win. I was going to say, anyway, Clemson's going to win for sure.
Let's see. Is there anything else? North Carolina, NC State. I mean, NC State sneaky 8-3 season out of almost nothing. You know, they were kind of written off early. Dave Doran's done a hell of a job there. I mean, he's Dave Doran's been there a long time.
Yeah, and I think this is one of his best jobs. I mean, honestly, that QB play has been atrocious, and they're 8-3. They lost a lot off the last. They've lost a lot the last two off seasons. So I'm impressed.
All right. Well, I think we're getting to the point in the podcast now where dogs are barking.
Dogs are going nuts.
Things are in the oven. It's almost Thanksgiving. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. We will be busy because it's a busy time of year in our profession. But, yeah, we'll take a little time to eat some turkey as well. So, yeah, it's going to be awesome. So thanks very much for listening to the College Football Fix podcast presented by USA Today Sports. For Paul Meyerberg and for Eric Smith, our college sports editor, who is sitting in, producing the show, keeping us in line. Happy holidays. Hope everybody has a great weekend watching football. And hopefully the picture will be a little more clear when we talk to you next week.
The College Football Fix podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix podcast from USA Today Sports.